From the heart of our nation's capital, this is Washington Watch Weekend Edition. Now, here's your host, David Salkeld.
This week on the Weekend Edition of Washington Watch, evidence of corruption continues to roll in. The FBI is going after religious conservatives, and the preservation of women in sports has a strong advocate. Greetings, fellow patriots. I am David Salkeld, and I'm a constitutional conservative, Christian husband, and Reagan Republican. On Wednesday of this week, House Oversight Committee Chair James Comer released a third bank memo from the committee's probe into the influence peddling schemes of the Biden family. And the committee says foreign payments to the Biden family now add up to over $20 million. Joining FRC Action President and guest host Jody Heiss to discuss this is Congressman Matt Rosendale of Montana. Here's how Jody Heiss kicked things off.
Congressman Rosendale, always great to see you. Welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you, Jody. I'm glad I'm joining you from Montana this afternoon, though, I have to tell you.
Well, I know compared to the swamp, Montana is absolutely a heaven in so many ways. I love your great state. Let's get into this. What is your basic assessment of the latest memo that has been released from Oversight Chairman Comer?
I think Jamie's doing a great job. He has exposed the Biden crime family for what they truly are. They have sold our nation out. The president, while he was serving as vice president with China, and his son to Kazakhstan, Russia, Ukraine. People wonder why I've been so opposed to sending billions and billions of dollars to Ukraine during this conflict with Russia. While it's an unprovoked war, Russia is completely wrong. What I do know is when you send cash monies to a country like that, all it's going to do is continue to perpetuate and worsen the corruption that has taken place and had been taking place for many years before Russia ever invaded the nation. And now we are seeing by bank statements that Hunter Biden was tied directly to it. Again, we know that at that time, Vice President Biden was negotiating deals with China, and we have seen that his entire family has been enriched. And it is absolutely disturbing to see that the current resident in the White House, President Biden, basically profited off of selling our nation off to foreign countries.
Yeah, it really is disturbing. And it seems like every day more and more smoke is coming to surface here. And yet what's puzzling and disturbing to me, quite frankly, not surprising, but nonetheless disturbing, is how the legacy media looks at all this. And it's like they look at one piece of the puzzle and then they say, okay, well, that's a piece of the puzzle. And they ignore it totally. But the reality is we have this piece and we have this piece and we have all this starting to come together. What is the picture beginning to look like in your mind as all the pieces begin to fit into place?
Oh, it was absolutely a pay-to-play operation that the vice president, or the president at now, President Biden, had set up with his family so that they could all benefit from his position of power. And he sold that power. You know, it's interesting, Jody. We had a gun store in Great Falls, Montana about a month ago that was raided. That was raided by 20 armed IRS agents, not ATF. This was a gun store and a shooting range, and they had 20 IRS agents raid that store. They were fully dressed in body armor, and each one was outfitted with an AR-15, and they took 13,800 documents. We haven't seen anything like that happen to the Delaware residents of President Biden with all of the clear transactions that have been exposed through the bank records that Representative Jamie Comer has been able to acquire and show the trail of corruption that leads directly to the White House door.
Wow. Yeah, I did read about that raid that you're referencing. And yeah, the comparison between the two is stunning. You know, it was somewhat comical to watch. I don't know if you saw yesterday on Fox News, Peter Ducey, he actually asked about the testimony of Hunter Biden's former business partner, Devin Archer, to the president. And he said to the president, he says that you were on speakerphone more than 20 times. And that exchange, here's what the president had to say.
There's this testimony now where one of your son's former business associates is claiming that you were on speakerphone a lot with them talking business. Is that what?
I've never talked business in anybody. And I know you'd have a lousy question.
Well, what do you? It's why is that a lousy question?
Because it's not true.
Was that a lousy question?
It's a perfectly good question, and we're the rest of the country is wondering why there's not any professional curiosity with any so-called journalist across the nation. It's up to Peter Ducey to try and expose this. It's just unbelievable. Again, President Trump makes a question, makes a telephone call to Zelensky and says, if you don't clean up your corruption, we're not going to continue to send you aid. Joe Biden calls up Zelensky and says, if you don't drop an investigation against my son, then you're not going to get aid. Oh, and by the way, we want to make sure that he is positioned on all of these boards so that he can generate revenue for the Biden crime family. The people across this country don't have problems understanding this terrible double standard. And if I've said it once, I've said it 50 times. The equal justice under the law can't be a slogan, Jody. It's got to be a reality. And right now, we are not witnessing that. And I'll tell you, if I have a couple of minutes, I know that you're going to go into Christopher Wray and the FBI later, but I have to tell you, as a Catholic, I am deeply, deeply offended by the way that they have turned additional investigative services against Catholics. And I will tell you how I feel and how a lot of Catholics feel. This nation is under greater threat of harm from the Catholic who's sitting in the White House than they are from Catholics who are attending Latin masses.
Absolutely. And that's one reason I wanted to have you on today, because I know you're a devout Catholic. We've had many conversations on the House floor and other places about your faith, and I have deep, deep respect for you. But this issue, the FBI director, Christopher Wray, I mean, he testified just last month that this memo going after Catholics was just a single product coming from a single field office, and now it appears that simply is not true. Your take on that?
It is not true. They proved that it was corroborated between Portland and Los Angeles and Richmond. And if Christopher Wray says, I was aghast, and when I found this out, I removed this document from the FBI system. Jody, if he was truly aghast, how about the people that prepared it being removed from the FBI system? That's what he should have done. That's what a leader would have done. We've got some bad eggs within these Department of Justice systems, the FBI, and they're conducting surveillance on American citizens, and it is wrong. And so I will say once again, we've got more problems and a larger threat from the Catholic who is sitting in the White House than Catholics that are practicing their faith in a Latin mass.
Exclamation point to that. And, you know, I look at all this, Congressman, and you just wonder the double-tiered system of justice, the destruction of the FBI, all of this. We've got to have transparency. We've got to get to the bottom of this. And I just want to again say thank you for your incredible leadership on so many fronts. And thank you again for coming on the program this evening.
Thanks for having me on, and thank you to the Family Research Council. You're putting a lot of hope in a lot of people's lives.
Thank you so much. All right, friends, coming up, we're going to actually have a former FBI agent joining us. In fact, he's the initial whistleblower. It brought so many of these issues to light. You don't want to miss it. Stay tuned. We'll be right back after this break.
This fall, believers from across America will gather in our nation's capital. We'll hear from government leaders, policy experts, and leading Christian voices, learning how we can engage in government at every level, from local school boards to state legislatures to Congress and even the White House, to win back the soul of our nation. Join with us for the Pray, Vote, Stand Summit, Believe and Engage, September 15th through 17th. Register now at PrayVoteStand.org.
Good afternoon. Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Jody Heiss, filling in this evening for Tony, who is taking some well-deserved time off, and I'm glad to be with you. All right, we just ended the last segment talking about the FBI. I want to drill a little bit deeper into that. You probably remember last month, FBI Director Christopher Wray was literally grilled at a Judiciary Subcommittee hearing on the FBI oversight, and Director Wray was asked specifically about a memo targeting certain Catholics and claiming them to be potential violent extremists. Well, here is one of his responses to that question.
Well, what I can tell you is you're referring to the Richmond product, which was a single product by a single field office, which as soon as I found out about it, I was aghast and ordered it withdrawn and removed from FBI systems.
Oh, really? Really? A single product coming from a single field office. And once he found out about it, he took care of it. Well, not according to a new document that shows the involvement of multiple field offices in the creation of the memo's assessment. Well, joining me now to offer his insights is Kyle Serafin. He's a former FBI agent and the initial whistleblower who brought many of the revelations of a politicized FBI to light. Kyle, welcome back to Washington Watch. It's great to have you, sir.
Well, thanks for having me on, Jody.
Well, listen, before we get into what was just uncovered, can you give us just a quick refresher course on the memo itself and how it came to light?
Yeah, absolutely. So I left the FBI in April of 2022. I had my badge, my gun removed. This was after whistleblower activity related to dealing with parents at school board meetings, an allegation that I made that the attorney general may have committed perjury. And so that's the background that got me out of the FBI's field office, but it didn't keep me from looking into what was going on at the FBI. And obviously, I had a lot of contacts there. I had a whistleblower approach me and ask for a route to Congress in order to expose a intelligence product, which basically drew a line around radical traditionalist Catholics, which was a term I was not familiar with until this document. And it stated that Latin mass Catholics likely have common cause with white supremacists, and therefore the FBI should be introducing various different methods to combat that, including recruiting sources inside the Catholic Church, which was pretty eye-opening to me and also to the individual who brought it to me, who was not a Catholic, but is someone who took their oath seriously. And so when that happened, I wrote a just sort of a expose, if you will, at uncoverdc.com with Tracy Beans. And we gave the entire document to the media. We gave it to the public because it is the American people's tax dollars at work. And we said, here's my write-up on it. This is what my take is. I used to work in the intelligence field, so I understand how they're written. But you could do what you want with it, because a lot of different people wrote stories about it everywhere from Daily Signal, Daily Caller, Daily Wire, you name it. People went out and this went pretty big. I ended up on Tucker Carlson talking about it. And the basic story is that this is a problem. It's a First Amendment protected activity, and it shouldn't be where the FBI is going. It was where they went, led to a bunch of questions, and that got us to the point where Jim Jordan's committee has been asking more and more, what in the world went on here? How did the FBI ended up in this scenario? And then, even though I think Chris Wray probably avoided a perjury trap by what he said, because it did originate from one field office and it was one document, there were multiple field offices involved in getting the information behind it, which is kind of what we all suspected, those of us who work in this sort of world.
And it's all deception in the answer. I mean, he knew very well that there were multiple offices. And I mean, this was you don't have offices in Portland or San Francisco or wherever all these may end up coming out of, just doing something like this at the spur of the moment all at the same time. Somehow this is people following a directive. Isn't that correct?
I believe so. Yeah. So this is a single intelligence product that was trying to create what I would call like a seed crystal. People can imagine the initial cell of a seed and it builds around it. When you're doing intelligence work, you're trying to build up a body of work that justifies, you know, what your job is. That's what these intelligence analysts do. So this was the initial product that went out there doing that, but it was gathering from multiple different sources in different field offices. This included human sources and some reporting that they had that came out of Portland and Los Angeles. And the idea was, is we're going to generate this sort of fake threat because there's this like massive demand for white supremacy in the FBI, and the supply doesn't really meet it. So let's see if we can find it in the Catholic Church. And the whistleblower who brought it to me and we got to Congress basically said, if they can get into the Catholic Church, they can get into any other Christian denomination, because this is just a pry bar to go after Christians in general. And almost all of the positions that they were espousing that were so-called white supremacist positions, they're just mainline conservative positions.
Now, the investigation is still ongoing. What do you think the Judiciary Committee, I mean, obviously, they're wanting more information. What are they looking for?
They're looking for the names of the people that approved it. They're going to want to know who was also approving these source operations that were happening in the other field offices. So now we have multiple field offices involved. So there's a web of people that are interested in going after Catholics. The question is, who are they and how pervasive is it in the FBI? We also saw stories like Mark Hout, who was arrested by the Bureau in Philadelphia. So there's other anti-Christian, anti-Catholic bias that is being seen. And the craziest thing about it, for those of us that worked in the FBI is one of the most Christian and probably the most Catholic organizations that I've ever seen in the federal government. There are so many Catholics that work there, and even Latin Mass Catholics who would travel from Quantico while they were at the academy would go down to some of these parishes in the Richmond field office. And they reached out to me individually, even though I was out of the Bureau, and they were furious with what this said. So there is this strange dividing of the ranks, and obviously they're targeting people even within the Bureau.
All right, 30 seconds left. FBI Director Ray says that there is an inspection underway. Explain to us real quickly, what does the FBI mean by an inspection?
So there's an entire division. It's called Inspection Division. They're supposed to do internal investigations, but you'll be shocked to learn that when the FBI investigates itself, it often finds that the FBI is not guilty of what the FBI has accused itself of. So it often comes up in a very favorable manner. You know, the government looking after the government is not a good watchdog.
Wow. Thank you, former FBI agent Kyle Serafin. Always great to talk with you. Thank you for your leadership.
That's my pleasure.
You can find out more about Kyle as well as additional coverage of the topic when you visit TonyPerkins.com. That's TonyPerkins.com.
We live in a culture that has lost sight of what is true. Many, including Christians, are searching for answers to life's most important questions. With this in mind, Family Research Council's Center for Biblical Worldview has partnered with Summit Ministries to present Now We Live, a free 6-episode video series designed to encourage worldview discussions central to the Christian faith. Each episode offers practical instruction led by leading Christian thinkers. Access this series at frc.org/worldview.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm David Salkeld. We've been covering the disgraceful story of Leah Thomas, a male collegiate swimmer who identified as female, for quite a while. And today, we're privileged to have with us one of his competitors and a woman who is taking a very public stand on this issue. Riley Gaines has traveled the country speaking out about the need to protect female spaces, challenging the rules of the NCAA, USA Swimming, and the International Olympic Committee. And she has encouraged other female athletes to step forward and highlight why men competing in female sports is blatantly unfair and harmful. Here's guest host Jody Heiss as he gets things started.
Riley, welcome to Washington Watch. Great to have you.
Amazing. Thank you so much. It's good to be here.
Well, it's always great to see you. Listen, let's begin, if we can, just with some of your story, particularly going back to, with your encounter with Leah Thomas. Some of our viewers and listeners may not know that. So if you can go back as far as you need to, but just share a moment what that was like for you.
Absolutely. So I grew up my whole life swimming. Started when I was 4 years old, went all the way through college. So I dedicated 18 years of my life to my sport. But my senior year was different. About midway through my season, I was ranked third in the country behind one phenomenal swimmer who I knew very well. Because like in most sports, your top tier athletes, you know of each other, regardless of where you're competing in the country, because you've grown up competing against each other. And she was in second, and I was trailing her by maybe a few 100ths or 10ths of a second. But the swimmer who was ranked first, we had never heard of. And this is the first time I became aware of a swimmer named Leah Thomas. And there was a lot of red flags at the time. Again, unbeknownst to me, this was anything other than a female until an article came out disclosing very briefly that Leah Thomas is formerly Will Thomas and swam 3 years on the men's team at University of Pennsylvania before deciding to switch to the women's team. And so I was so shocked when I read this, but really I felt a sense of relief because I then went to look up who Will Thomas was. And I saw that this was a mediocre male swimmer at best, ranking 462nd in the country when competing against the men. But that's why I say I was relieved, because I thought the NCAA would see it how I saw it and how my parents saw it and my teammates and my coaches saw it, how anyone with a brain would probably comprehend this. But they did not see it that way. They saw nothing wrong with it. And so that first day of competition at our national championships, which keep in mind, this is the fastest meet in the world. Thomas swam to a national title, becoming the first male to win a Division I NCAA title against the women. But that next day of competition was a 200 freestyle, which almost impossibly enough, Thomas and I raced and we tied, meaning we went the exact same time down to the hundredth of a second. And really what thrusted me into the stance that I've taken now is upon tying, we go behind the awards podium where the NCAA official looks at both Thomas and myself and says, great job, but you guys tied. And we only have one trophy and we're going to give this trophy to Leah. And I was so taken aback. And I asked the question that no one dared ask all season. And I said, okay, why? I know we tied. I know, you know, there's only one trophy, but why are you adamant on giving this trophy to a man in the women's 200 freestyle? And I actually appreciate their honesty because he told me, well, we've been advised when pictures are being taken, we have to give the trophy to Thomas. But you can pose with this one, but you have to give yours back, Riley. You go home empty-handed. Leah takes the trophy home. End of story. And it was that moment that I knew. It was. It's still unbelievable. But it was that moment when I knew I couldn't lie anymore because I was lying up until that point.
Yeah, I've heard this story so many times, Riley, and every time it just I'm spellbound hearing you say it, and I'm as ticked off as though I was hearing it for the very first time every time you mention it. Because you have the competition on the one side, but then there's just the presence of Leah Thomas in the locker rooms and all of that sort of stuff where other women swimmers were affected, including yourself. Did anyone stick up for you and the other female athletes during all of this?
Really, no. Privately, of course, you know, we would have conversations with our coaches and the parents and different people, even within the NCAA, who knew this was wrong. And of course, they felt ashamed of themselves for going along with it, but they didn't do anything about it. And that's why I waited. That's why I cowered for all season, really. By the time I learned who Leah Thomas was in November of 2021 until March of 2022, I had conversations about it and I expressed my opinions privately, but nothing where I was willing to take a public stance because I was scared. I was scared of the backlash. I was scared of the lies they told us, how they emotionally blackmailed us into silence. They told us that we would never get a job if we spoke out. We would lose our scholarship. We would lose our friends. You wouldn't get into grad school if you spoke out. They told us we would be murderers if we spoke out, because if any harm were to come towards Thomas's way and he were to harm himself, then we would be responsible for a death, making us murderers. I mean, think about that. Wanting fair play, they were equating that to murder. And it worked. It worked in keeping us silent.
It's stunning to hear this. So tell us what was going through your mind, what was going through your heart before you started speaking out. Because as you just described, there was tremendous intimidation. There was an attempt to do everything to force you to be silent about it. But there was a breakthrough where you started working through this and you said, I've got to speak out. So before that transition, in the midst of all that, what was going through your mind and your heart before you had that breakthrough?
There was a lot. I think one, knowing what we were going through in terms of, again, the silencing and kind of the attempts to re-educate us is what they called it. They wanted us to go to counseling if we felt uncomfortable in the locker rooms. Counseling, of course, provided through the LGBTQ Education Center. And knowing what we went through and then thinking about the next generation of female athletes, next generation of women, or really of humans, especially Christians. I mean, what we're up against, and those who don't yet have a voice, those who don't yet understand the implications of what this means for them, that's who I'm fighting for. It's not for me. I'm done competing. No one wants to see me swim anymore. I'd probably drown at this point if I even tried. So it's not for me. It's so much bigger than me. And I think realizing that seeing what I saw, facing what I faced, I felt like I was lying to myself. It felt wrong to watch this happen and do nothing about it.
Absolutely. So our time is wrapping up. What keeps you energized? You're all over the place. What is the driving force that keeps you energized to do what you're doing?
Knowing I'm doing it for more than just myself. The messages I get every single day, you would die if you saw them. Actually, your heart would probably break. They're coming from female athletes. These are messages from parents. These are messages from coaches who don't know what to do. They need a voice. And I'm happy to be that megaphone for them. That's what keeps me going. That's what keeps me energized. I haven't gotten burnt out yet. And I have been, it's a toll. Make no mistake. It's a toll. It takes a toll on me, both physically, you know, emotionally, on my marriage. But I just know how important it is and what's at stake if I don't. And fighting for that, fighting for sanity, for common sense, that's what's keeping me going. And of course, my faith. I would be remiss if I didn't mention my faith and just how important that is in this fight, and in this fight that is entirely spiritual.
Well, it is spiritual. All of this is a spiritual battle. And Riley, let me just tell you, we are so excited to have you joining us next month at the Pray Vote Stand Summit. And, you know, we are hoping that this event will encourage people and help equip them to make an impact in their various spheres of influence. To wrap this up in the next 45 seconds or so, why do you think it's important for us to for people to come together for events like this, to pray, to vote, and to take a stand?
For too long, we haven't. We are called the silent majority for a reason, and it's because we've been silent. We have to link arms. We have to stand together. We have to roll up our sleeves and say enough is enough. And doing it through prayer, doing it through voting, I mean, those are the principles that we all need to rely on. And so I couldn't be more excited for the event. I think it'll be foundational, fundamental, really, in creating that impact and change that this country needs to see.
Thank you, Riley Gaines, for coming on the program with us this evening. And thank you for standing in there fighting the good fight. God bless you.
Of course. Thank you.
Well, unfortunately, that's all the time we have for today. I'm David Salkel. Thank you for being with us. I look forward to having you back here again next week for the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins.
Washington Watch Weekend Edition is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com.